Hello everyone, welcome back. My name is Arna Sahu, host of Arna's News, where on this podcast channel, I aim to eliminate the gender gap in the STEM fields by featuring inspiring female professionals and highlighting their stories and accomplishments to further encourage girls. Today on episode 45.
Based on that, what I want to say is, you know, women who are interested in pursuing a career should strive to, you know, get out there and present themselves in these opportunities, right? That is the first step. If you don't even present yourself, then, you know, that basically seals the deal, right? You're not able to move forward from there. So first, definitely don't stop on the first step. Get yourself out there and, you know, apply to whatever it is that you're seeking to get into, and, you know, and keep knocking at doors, right? Don't stop at 1 or 10. If it goes to 800 or 1,000, like, just keep applying till you hit gold.
Today on episode 45, I'm pleased to announce our guest, Dana Bala. As a chief technology officer at Pacer Pro, she's an engineering leader with diverse experiences in architecting and delivering distributed software systems for more than half a dozen high-profile corporations, such as Deep Sentinel, Illumio, Aruba Networks, and Motorola, in both enterprise and consumer categories, such as cybersecurity, wireless networks, network management, customer premises equipment, and embedded systems. As someone who has led technical direction, planning, execution, and delivering of disparate distributed systems, and re-architected several brownfield subsystems, she is a true champion to technology and an immense enthusiast. So thank you so much, Dana, for being here today. Before we dive into the questions, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey, Arna, thank you so much for having me on your show. That was a really beautiful introduction. I think you pretty much covered bases there. I didn't have anything further to add, just excited to join you on the show.
Perfect. So my first question for you is, tell us a bit about your career path.
Okay. So the career path question is pretty generic and overloaded, right? So let me see what stands out on the top of my mind. I would say that, you know, one thing that has been a common theme in my career has been the fact that I've been trying to do new things every step of the way, right? For example, you know, my bachelor's. So after high school, my bachelor's was in electrical and electronics engineering. And then I switched into master's of computer science and engineering, you know, and then in the career, you know, I started with QA automation testing, moved into front end and then back end, DevOps, technical leadership, people leadership. So I think I was fortunate to have a broad exposure, I would say, compared to average. And I think that has helped me well. So I would summarize it as, you know, variety being the spice of my career life.
Yeah, that's really cool. I liked how you always try to do new things in your life, whether it be from going to electrical engineering to automation software. So that's super cool.
Thank you.
Okay, so what advice would you give someone wanting to pursue a career similar to yours? And do you have any tips to succeed?
Okay. Yeah. And obviously, I know these are all, again, specific to case by case. Speaking from the high school, viewpoint, I'm sure, you know, you're talking to career guidance counseling folks. And, you know, I know that there are like consulting firms that specialize in career development, right? So it's a whole industry in itself. And, you know, there's definitely answer that that would be beneficial on a case-to-case basis. But I can give some generic ideas that come to my mind right now. One of them is, you know, it's never too late because, you know, and also we had our passions change with time, right? When I was your age, I remember being very interested in biotechnology in my 11th grade. And I actually prepared for my medical school and I did not get in. So, I mean, when I was applying to colleges in India, it was a common theme that you would prepare for engineering or medicine, although they're vastly different. If you didn't become a doctor, voila, you became engineer, right? So that's actually how I got into engineering. Luckily, I got into engineering because my dad is a retired space scientist, and I always had a strong background in electronics and just science fields. So engineering was my backup plan, and that's how I ended up there. And then computer science was also kind of by dumb luck because, I came to the US with my electrical and electronics background, and I couldn't find a job in the Bay Area for many months. And then my husband suggested that software engineering switch may be a good idea if I was really looking to, start a career. It opens up new opportunities. So I would say that, it's never too late. You may be passionate about something. Also, not to worry if the passion itself is not clear, right? That's one of the hard questions, like, what is your major? What do you want to do or not in your life, right? How many times do you get asked that question?
I get asked a few times, but I do have a plan. I mean, I'm one of the
Good.
people that I get really anxious when I don't have a plan. So that's why I'm like, okay, this is what I want to do. And if I don't get that, then it's kind of a problem. But knowing that it's okay to kind of like shift around, because before when I was a kid, I kind of wanted to go into business and I never really saw myself in STEM. I thought it was pretty boring seeing my dad always, go to meetings and just having the most boring discussions ever. So I kind of wanted to distance myself from that, and then boom, I kind of got myself into technology and I've never looked back.
Awesome. Hey, good for you. I mean, like you said, very few people actually know at this age, what they want to do. And it's really awesome when you do know what you want to do. So that's something to, so never too late is something to keep in mind. The other thing I would throw in there is job security is not a thing, right? After being in many companies, I've learned that, we emphasize a lot on job security, right? We surround ourselves with things like mortgage and expensive car or whatever else is your financial constraint. And then that ties to job security, right? And I've learned over time that, if you're willing to start from scratch and sort of question what your true financial constraints are and what your optional financial constraints are, then you may actually have more freedom to move things around in your life to arrange it in such a way that you can again pursue your passion.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked what you said, that it's never too late to do something. I mean, there's like so many stories that, oh, once you're like 30, you have to be able to be good at this one thing, and boom, that's where your life starts. But that's kind of not the case, because in life, there's so many ups and downs. So just being okay with something that might start and prosper when you're older, or maybe when you're younger, that's totally okay. And although it might not be what society prefers, quote unquote, it's totally fine.
There you go. The one more item that I would add in there is, differentiating between passion and emotion, right? So passion is, there's a fine line, I would say. And there's, I mean, if you search the dictionary meaning of it, they're different things, but we tend to intermingle them, right? So you could be passionate about something and, you throw yourself into it and try everything you can to make progress there. That bucket is passion, right? And that's long term and that's strategic, right? And it is again very personal to you, right? And the other side of the coin is emotion, where you're talking about short term things, how you feel at a point in time, how are you reacting to something that's happening around you, right? All that falls under emotion, right? So and I think there's benefit to acknowledging, where you're where you lie in at a particular point in time, because one thing I've learned over through experience is that the person that's in charge or in control of a situation has a better say in the group than someone who's throwing tantrums, right? So I think that applies in high school too, right? Like I'm sure there's some level of bullying or like just different types of personality clashes, and how you work around those, no matter what those kind of situations are, it makes sense to just learn to be in charge of your emotions.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree, because No matter where you are, like in school or in the office or any type of workspace, it's really good to manage your emotions and know that, oh, this is something that you're feeling, and just knowing how you can take in charge and be an advocate for that. And also, that's kind of, yeah, it's similar to passion in a sense, but there's also a bit of a line there. And yeah, okay, so
Have you
my.
been what's an example of sorry, this might be like you can choose to not answer, but I was curious, how you work around situations where you're pushed emotionally.
Well, it kind of depends on the setting. If it's at home, then I'm gonna be a little straightforward with the response. But if it's at school, then I kind of it doesn't really happen to me frequently, but if so, then I kind of just first I calm myself down, and then I kind of ask the person who's telling me these things, like, what was the reason behind this? Can you explain more? And kind of just get to the point of it, because I don't really want to escalate the issue. But whenever that does happen, although rarely, that's like my go-to thing.
That's awesome. So yeah, you mentioned just seeking clarity, right? That's a great strategy because when there's a conflict, sometimes there's misunderstanding or miscommunication, right? So your idea of just setting the stage clear and seeking to understand what the person's trying to say, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, and that's like another advice to help, with any type of career path, regardless of STEM. It's just something that people should implement in their lives.
Cool.
All right. And my next question for you is, what is a common myth about your profession that you want to debunk?
Okay, yeah, this one is actually like I'm actually taking an easy answer out, but I truly feel this, which is why I'm saying it. I think the myth that I want to debunk is that it's hard for women to thrive in software engineering, right? So I think that's a myth, and I'll try to give you some data to back it up, right? So if you look at the software industry, especially computer and or any other type of engineering field, I would say maybe 15 to 30% of the workforce in this space is occupied by women, right? And that's a small number, right? Compared to men, it is true that women are smaller in percentage in these areas than men. However, what I've seen in my experience is that there's not enough representation, right? So if there is representation and then women are still a minority, then you could make a case for, okay, so it looks like there is some what do you call discrepancy here, and something's not sitting well, right? But what I'm observing, I can give you an example, right? I opened two recs for fresh grads recently. And out of the thousands of resumes, I found only 25 to 50 applicants that were women. So, based on that, what I want to say is, women who are interested in pursuing a career should strive to, get out there and present themselves in these opportunities, right? That is the first step. If you don't even present yourself, then that basically seals the deal, right? You're not able to move forward from there. So first, definitely don't stop on the first step. Get yourself out there and apply to whatever it is that you're seeking to get into, and keep knocking at doors, right? Don't stop at one or 10. If it goes to 800 or 1,000, like just keep applying till you hit gold. That's something that I would say definitely based on my very recent experience about how I thought there was really very low representation of young women in the fresh grad software engineering job rec.
I mean, that's a pretty staggering statistic. Out of 1,000, there were only 50 women.
Yeah, that was surprising to me too.
Yeah, that's pretty shocking. But I mean, that's something that's like really important, because not a lot of people, like, although they might have the same background as others, they don't really have the confidence to kind of push through and kind of apply for these jobs. So, I mean, that's something that's like a really big stigma in STEM that you can't really thrive or succeed. And that's why a lot of people, they kind of look elsewhere because they think that the competition is so high. When in reality, there's so many cool ways that women can thrive. There's such an amazing network of women that you should definitely try getting into, whether it be in conferences or just relying on your network through social media. I mean, it's an amazing place to be in, and I definitely recommend you to stay here.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely agree. And also the fact that, HR is definitely looking to increase diversity, the fact that more applicants are represented, not just in women, right? In other areas where people, where the vertical might be a minority, regardless of what the minority category is, it is important to make sure that you represent yourself in as many opportunities as possible to maximize your chances of getting selected.
Yeah, definitely. And my next question for you is, if you could step into my shoes or your younger self, what would you have asked yourself that I didn't?
Yeah, so is this question for self when in high school? As in, what would Arna need to think about in high school now? Is that the question? Or
The question's kind of, it could be similar to it, but what you would like to tell your younger self.
Oh, what I would like to tell my younger self. So, is the younger self in current time? As in, is my younger self in 2023? Is that
Yeah,
what?
like
Okay. Yeah. If I'm talking about a high school self now, then definitely, staying on top of technological advancements in artificial intelligence, right? So, I mean, it's hard to not know all the changes and accelerations happening in the machine learning and AI space, right? So that's something that I would seek to learn more as a high schooler. And also because in high school, I'm looking to see what my career options are, what are the opportunities and threats around AI's influence on various career paths, right? Like if I'm chasing medicine, what kind of jobs are AI proof, right? There are things that there are workflows and use cases that AI and ML are going to take over in the next few years. But then there are also, human-centric jobs that will still be relevant. So as a high schooler, I would definitely spend time to focus on, understanding how AI is going to play out as far as careers and major selection goes.
Yeah, I mean, being more proactive or being proactive for, what your future might entail. And it kind of circles back to being okay with changing things up or just finding something new, regardless of the place you're in life. And I think that's something that people should definitely implement in their life because when you don't really know what's going to happen in the future, that kind of, you're at a little bit of a loss. So just being proactive with your search and just your knowledge for current trends and just being on top of these technological advancements.
Yeah, I agree. I would also throw in hands-on, right? For example, I'm sure you're using ChatGPT, right? It's very handy, and I know definitely use the school's recommendation for how you should, legally use ChatGPT for schoolwork. But in any case, it's a very powerful tool. I would also go one step further and try their playground, and not just OpenAI, other equivalent frameworks as well, but just go one step deeper because the playground lets you understand, how you learn to use prompts in order to get the response that you're looking for, right? Basically, learning how to use these tools itself is a field, right? Prompt engineering and just understanding how to glean answers that you're looking for from these tools, I think would also be a cross-cutting skill for anyone to have. And that's not even specific to STEM, right? If you're, let's say you're in music production, how can I use these ML tools that are so suddenly so easily accessible to do my job better in that field, right? So it basically we're really looking at overlaps between HAS and STEM. HAS, where HAS is humanities and arts and social sciences, and basically universal set minus STEM is also pretty now getting merged with STEM because one feeds the other. So I think it's an exciting time to be looking at career options.
I liked what you said, one feeds the other. I mean, ChatGPT and machine learning, they're kind of real life, real time examples of where STEM is very applicable because a lot of people think that STEM has its own defined domain. And it's kind of a misnomer and misconception because ChatGPT, it's something that every single industry can use, every single person can use, regardless of where they are. Like, as a student, I use it kind of to quite frequently, which is a little bit of a problem. But I mean, regardless of where you are, what major you're in, it kind of shows the importance and the power of technology. So it's something that you should definitely invest your time in.
May I ask why you thought using ChatGPT could become a problem?
Because I'm a little too reliant on it. Yeah, a little. It's a bit too much of an addiction, I'd say, because you're not really supposed to be using it in school. It's kind of blocked, at least in my district, because people use it way too often to write their essays and their homework problems. But definitely, if you need help with math, it's an amazing tool to use. I definitely recommend you to go for it. But yeah, that's kind of the reason why ChatGPT is a little bit of a problem here.
I see. I think that's also important for the ed tech, education tech to recognize, right? Because, okay, pre-Chat GPT era, there were some skill sets that were required from students, right? But given that now you have a much powerful tool in hand, are the current set of requirements for students matching what they should be given all these advancements, or should be how should the education and school curriculum change given these tools available, right? So that's something that's another like interesting field in itself because there's so much change that could happen with allowing students to use OpenAI and other powerful tools because that just changes the problem statement for students, right? Like, is it really important? How important is reading comprehension if you can just paste the paragraph and ask ChatGPT to give you a summary, right? So maybe then we should start asking some other questions.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of circles back to ethics, like how
Yeah.
education kind of correlates ethics to this. And I think that the education system will definitely change in the next few years because of artificial intelligence. I mean, it's literally a technology system able to spew out materials that normal humans couldn't do. And I think that's super fascinating. And yeah, so my next question for you is, what are the best resources slash books that have helped you find your career path?
Okay, I am a little non-traditional with in terms of reading books because I read a lot related to technology. So I read nonfiction and technology stuff on the internet all the time. When I say that, I'm thinking, OpenAI documentation or API documentation, right? So it's pretty much technical stuff. When it comes to like actual, hard paper book reading. One suggestion that comes to mind is this book called Return on Character by Professor Fred Keel. If you haven't read it, this book revolves around identifying, what qualities a corporate leader should have, right? And what Professor Keel is saying is that most people are technically competent and capable, right? Most leaders are checking off the checkbox as far as their competency goes. Where there seems to be a wide spectrum is the type of people they are, right? And he goes on to do some research to then prove with data that nicer leaders bring better results to the company than leaders who are toxic, right? So that's the premise of this book. And he also talks about four attributes of leaders. Two about the head and two about the heart. The head attributes are integrity and responsibility. And these terms, I think, are pretty self-explanatory and kind of expected out of leaders, right? Where he goes on as a what do you call difference compared to norm is when he talks about the heart qualities, which are forgiveness and compassion. So if you look at like standard business management, there's not much emphasis on these qualities for a leader, right? I mean, these, as things have changed in the last few years, you do hear, you know, servant leadership and, you know, putting the leader trying to help the rest of the team with whatever it takes to get them to do their job better, right? So there is definitely more focus now. However, I think the rubber not meeting the road is what Professor Keel talks about in that book. But in any case, it's a good read, and it goes to say that at the end of the day, you know, again, that also, you know, circles with the artificial intelligence topic very well too, because, you know, you can definitely easily accelerate, not definitely, but for the most part, easily accelerate logical stuff, right? As in analytical data, natural, large language models and natural language processing. Where we are seeing already the difference or the issues with these ML tools is when it comes to biases, right? Like what garbage in, garbage out, what you feed in is what's going to come out, right? So from that angle, you know, just trying to understand as a humanity, trying to understand what does it mean to be human, and how do we even quantify good and bad, right? Like who's to say what's good and bad? Yes, there is legal correctness and wrongness, but then there's also ethical correctness and law wrongness, and these two may not necessarily always overlap, right? So there's this whole gray area about, or like separate topic about what it is to be human. And I think that's what resonated with me in his book called Return on Character.
Yeah, that book seems like a very interesting one. I'll definitely give a read. I really liked how it's all about how to be a better leader and a corporate leader, that is, and just kind of having the skills to just be a better person and also lead effectively. I'll definitely give it a read.
Cool. Yeah, this is an old book, by the way, and there are other newer books by him. I think one of them is called Moral Intelligence, but I do like all his work because he's one of the few people that delves into how to bring ethics into corporate leadership, which is a challenging topic.
Yeah, and my next question for you is, what do you think is a vital factor that shaped your career? What was your life before learning it, and what was your life after learning it?
Yeah, so the first thing that comes to mind is setting boundaries. I think definitely in high school, you know, I used to be very keen on making sure that everyone's happy, that I don't, you know, I try not to make anyone happy or unhappy or angry, right? So basically do what it takes to keep all parties happy, including your teachers, your friends, your family, basically everybody, which translates to people pleaser, right? So then the price you pay is you lose who you are, right? Because you're busy trying to please everyone. And then you go, okay, what is it that I want, right? Like that seems to be nice from at the outset, because it's talking to someone that wants to be a selfless person, right? But then the problem is that if you can't even take care of yourself, then how are you going to take care of others, right? So then it's important for you to say, okay, this is my boundary, and that's how far you can go if you're trying to push my buttons. And if you push any harder, you're going to see a different side of me, right? So that was revelational for me to know, because then I felt that, okay, I can actually say no to these people. I can say no to my teacher. I can say no to my colleagues. I can say no to my boss. How free do I feel right now?
Yeah, I mean, when you're brought up, at least for me, I was told to always respect the people that I'm around. You know, that means just saying yes, saying thank you, saying, I mean, these normal like manners that you're supposed to like kind of have. But I guess it's kind of like interesting, because in a class that I'm in, it's kind of filled with seniors and juniors and sophomores. Like, it's not just a grade specific class. And so that's why I'm always on my toes saying thank you to like my seniors and everything. But I feel like you should always have these types of boundaries that you keep, because wherever you are, you're supposed to be at your safest. And if you kind of let people trample all upon your boundaries and you feel kind of walked on, you know, you're walking around eggshells, it's not really the best way to go. So just having a clear line of your boundaries and maybe having your own bubble, That's something that you should definitely have and kind of be more open about with yourself and with others.
Yeah, and also that ties to the contract, right? So if you look at any kind of relationship in the school or workplace, there's usually a role that you're interfacing with, right? For example, when you're in high school, you're interfacing with a teacher or with a friend or a classmate, right? So there is a clear protocol established around the school premise, right? So the location is the school, or the domain is the school, and the relationship is very clearly set, which means the mutual expectations are pretty straightforward too, right? So then you can say, okay, this is the deal, and let me see how I can be a good citizen as long as I'm following these rules, right? And which means that everything outside of that is up to you to navigate, right? So you can always feel free to explore the areas that are not defined to say, okay, what should be the right answer as far as my response to these areas goes, right? And also there's rules that are what do you call not clearly defined, right? As I can give an example, in the high school, there may be a rule that says, you cannot be tardy, or if you come after the bell rings, you're tardy, right? So that may be a rule in the handbook written in some shape or form. But then there may be this one teacher that when you walk in 5 minutes late, he or she may mark you absent instead, right? That's not in the school book, right? So the teacher is choosing to do that for whatever reason they want to do it. But then that's an example of where you could, and then let's say a few months down, you get a letter from the principal saying, you've been tardy, you've been absent for these classes for these many times, so you're risking truancy, right? So then that means that in your head, you're going, wait, I was only tardy for some of these classes. How did I become absent, right? So I'm just giving an example of how you could try to stand up for yourself if you think that something is not sitting well, right? You're trying to be a good citizen. Yes, tardiness is bad, and you're trying to improve to go punctually to class. However, that's a completely different problem statement than being absent for all those classes, right? Which is not what you did anyways, right? So I'm just giving more color to say there are rules laid out, and then there are like rules that are not laid out, and then there are people that also decorate around those rules, which may not necessarily be rules, right? So then it is important to know what you're up against, and say help yourself as much as you can, because these are like very specific and gnarly points that even your parents or like friends may not be able to help you with, right? It's something that you have to navigate in life on your own, where you're trying to see where those boundaries are, what those rules are. There's support available, but at the end of the day, you're the one making decisions about your life. So all this to say, make sure to understand what the boundaries are, and make sure to understand what the relationship or the role is that you're playing with right now.
Absolutely. Just having your own, mindset on your boundaries and the things that make you comfortable with, wherever you are, whatever workspace you're in, that's something that, should be your own, personal, choice. And yeah, that shouldn't be taken away from. Thank you for tuning in to Arnest News, where we aim to inspire and empower women in STEM by featuring the stories of successful female professionals in the industry. Today, we have the pleasure of hearing from Dana Bala, the Chief Technology Officer at Pacer Pro, who shared three valuable pieces of advice. One, pursue new opportunities by being open to new experiences along the way and embracing change by adapting to new challenges. Two, job security is not guaranteed, and this statement is a testament to encouraging individuals to prioritize their passions. And three, the importance and the need of staying on top of technological advancements. Thus, that concludes episode 45. If you want to know more about how I relate to these amazing topics, then stay tuned for upcoming episodes. A free way to support this show is by leaving it a 5-star rating and a review on the player you are listening to. Let me know what you enjoy about this podcast, as it's a chance to tell me what you love about the show, and it helps others discover it too. Once again, thank you for finding me, and I hope we stay in touch with each other. Tito, you are listening to Arna Sahu, the host of Arna's News. Toodles!